You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. I hate my cell phone. I have to admit it. It's not easy to use. I hate my cell phone carrier because it locks me into a system. It doesn't let me choose the cell phone I'd like to use. It doesn't physically play nicely with my computer's calendar or its address book or my other tools that ideally would make my life easier. And if I want to change my situation, you know what that's like. If I want to move to another carrier, I have to buy a new phone because that phone doesn't fit the next carrier. I have to get a new service with the limitations that are all there. It's basically having to start all over again in many cases. And it makes you wonder, why can't they make a cell phone that lets me do what I want to do? Let me choose a provider I want to pick, the cell phone I want to pick. Wouldn't you like that, too? Well, we may be getting closer to that day because first Apple introduced the iPhone that basically puts a small computer in your pocket, and that gives you a lot more flexibility. You're still locked into that one carrier, so that's not so great. And you're still locked into the goodies that Apple wants to give you and let you have on their iPhone. But last week, Google, the search engine king, brought us a step closer, dipping its toe into the cell phone world. And now with a full-fledged G-phone, as they've been calling it, or people have been calling it, for lack of a better word, but by helping to develop a new set of software tools called Android that can run on many different headsets with interchangeable parts, and that could allow more flexibility for consumers. And this week, there are reports, unconfirmed reports, there's a Wall Street Journal article, among others, that Google is developing plans to create its own cell phone or wireless network. What's that all about? Well, joining us to sort out everything that's out there and what might be on the horizon are my guests. Stephen Cherry is a senior associate editor at the IEEE Spectrum magazine in New York, and he joins me here in our New York studios. Welcome back to the program, Steve.
Thank you, Aaron.
Rich Miner is the group manager for mobile platforms at Google. He was also one of the founders of Android. That's the cell phone platform I mentioned before. And he joins me by phone from Mountain View, California. Thanks for being with us, Rich.
Great to be here, Ira.
Mark McCluskey is a senior editor for products at Wired Magazine and was editor-in-chief of a Wired test that's a rundown of 300 new products that is out now. And he joins us by phone from San Francisco. Welcome back to the program, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Let me begin with you, Rich Miner. Can you tell us anything new about the rumors of a network and new Google network?
Not really so much, Ira. Google has been participating in discussions around 700 megahertz auction. We were primarily just trying to encourage some openness rules. We've mentioned we are exploring participating in the auction, but it's not going to be until December 3rd that we make decisions known.
What is so great about that auction? What is so useful about this new auction?
It's the last chunk of public spectrum that's being licensed to carriers, and so Google just thinks that it would be good if the FCC in licensing that spectrum considered some openness principles. Mm-hmm. I haven't been so much involved in that, with my focus primarily being on really looking at the handset, however.
Let's look at the handset. You've come out with these sets of tools, and there's a consortium of cell phone companies. Give us a little lay of the land here.
Sure. Well, I think, for a number of years, there's been the myth of the mobile internet. Everybody wants to have in their pocket a device which has a great web browser, a great online experience, and, of course, is still a great phone. We have mobile phones with some of the frustrations you mentioned before, but the ability for those phones to connect, be online, deliver applications like the small computer that they are sitting in our pocket has been much more myth than reality. So Google has been looking at that problem and with a number of partners that we call the Open Handset Alliance has announced a pretty robust platform, sort of all the software that you need to build a very powerful mobile phone that has not only great phone capabilities, but is also a great connected data device.
And it could be used on any of the mobile networks.
Yeah, the idea is that anybody could build a phone based on that platform. We had four hardware OEMs as a part of our announcement, and any carrier could launch those phones on their network, and we had a number of carriers that also were part of the announcement.
1-800-989-8255 is our number, talking about the new cell phone technologies, also on Second Life, if you'd like to join the folks over there. We're in science school in Second Life. How soon do you think this is going to happen? Will all of this be available, Rich?
So we've said that there'll be phones mid-next year,
yeah.
And we've already made available effectively the entire platform as a software development kit. So there's already large numbers of developers who've downloaded that whole software development kit for free and are off developing applications. We also announced $10 million worth of prizes that we're going to be awarding to some of the best applications that people build.
So people can win prizes to make applications that run on the phone?
Correct.
Mark McCluskey, how different is this from Apple's iPhone approach? They've been very successful with iPhone, and they've sort of opened up their environment a bit too.
Well, at the root level, it's actually almost 180 degrees opposed from Apple's approach with the iPhone. You know, what Apple is it's a very design-driven company, and it's one person's vision. It's Steve Jobs sitting at the top of Apple driving a vision of what their product should do. And to their credit, they've been immensely successful doing that. You know, what Google and the Android platform, the Open Handset Alliance, is looking at is providing tools across the world to basically anyone and hoping that that spurs innovation. So, Apple has announced that they are going to open up their own SDK for the iPhone so third-party developers can make applications which run on the iPhone. But, you know, at the root level, at sort of the system level, I don't think we're going to see the level of openness that we see Google pushing with Android.
Mm-hmm. Stephen Cherry, to a certain extent, it really doesn't matter what the phone in your hand can do if the network around it isn't powerful enough to support it.
I think that's exactly right. It has to be both powerful enough and open enough, and that's what makes some other news interesting in this context. Sprint, which some of us still think of as a long-distance company, but is the third largest cellular network in the United States, is sinking $3 billion into a completely new type of network, and it will be both powerful and open. It's called Zome. They plan on launching it next year. It's starting in Chicago and the Baltimore, Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. By April, they expect to have commercial service in those two cities, and by the end of the year, a whole bunch more, serving 70 million people overall, including, by the end of the year, New York. The network uses a technology called WiMAX, which is based on the IEEE 802.16 standard, and Sprint has a lot of spectrum. They can build a very powerful network, and they plan on making it completely open. It will be simply wireless broadband, like DSL, but completely wireless and mobile.
Would it work through my router in my home, or does it work through a giant router in a building somewhere?
Well, it's basically a cellular network. There are base stations that will actually be mounted antennas and radios to their existing base stations using a different frequency, the 2.5 gigahertz band. And they have 120 megahertz of spectrum to do this with. Compare that to the 700 megahertz auction, which only has 22 megahertz in the C band.
Mm-hmm. So they're really banking a lot of money on this idea.
$3 billion, and you can expect a service that really is DSL quality. It'll be.
I think we've clearly seen that the openness message is resonating, with a number of our partners, including the carriers. Clearly, they have an investment that they have to worry about and make sure they continue to capitalize. But they're all also realizing that while they can control some amount of content, we've also seen with services like YouTube what it means to open up content and let anybody publish. And I think, you know, the carrier's very interested in trying to understand how they can balance openness with their business principles.
Mm-hmm. We've heard a lot about net neutrality when it comes to the Internet. Is there such a thing in Internet service providers, how they handle traffic that's not in, you know, passing it along, Steve, if it's not to them?
Well, that's the interesting question. If AT&T, for example, doesn't want you to use voice over IP on their network, they don't have to allow it. That's true of Sprint's Zome network as well, but they've announced that they are not going to choose between applications or service providers, that they plan on running the kind of open network that the network neutrality advocates are advocating.
Rich Miner, are we going to have to see to create all the various little programs that you can put on a cell phone, are we going to have to see a new kind of cell phone out there?
Not so much, actually. It turns out the cell phones that are starting to ship today basically have the computational power that your desktop PC had only about 3 years ago. So we're seeing the mobile phones of today and certainly tomorrow have more than enough power to run powerful internet applications, games, and lots of other services.
Mm-hmm. Are we going to see, though, the Apple model of the touchscreen, do you think?
Certainly you'll see touchscreens continuing to evolve. Apple has done a brilliant job with the iPhone. We have touch support in our platform, and I think one of the problems that you have in the mobile phone is it's a small screen, typically with a small keyboard. So there's lots of innovations happening to try and figure out how do you give somebody a high-fidelity experience, the ability to input data when you're constrained with these small screens and small input devices, and some of the touch work that Apple has pioneered is certainly helping in that area, and I think you'll see other innovations.
So where's the money to be made here? Rich, I know that Google makes its money on ads on the Google pages, lots of advertising, but a cell phone has such a small screen to it. Is there going to be room for advertising? Is that the business model you're seeking here?
Well, that's certainly the primary business that Google is in, and you were right. There's certainly a lot more phones out there than there are TVs. There's close to twice as many phones out there as there are TVs. So there's a lot of phones, about a billion per year. The ability to put ads on those smaller screens is a challenge. Google has some very successful mobile applications. We have a great mobile Maps application and mobile Gmail application. And initially, we didn't try and put ads into those apps because we wanted to make a great experience for the users. But we do think as the screen resolutions get higher and as we continue to improve the user experience, we'll be able to insert ads. We just want to make sure that when we do insert ads, that they're meaningful and helpful to the user, that the user welcomes those ads, that they're in the right context. And we think if we can do that successfully, then we won't have problems with the business model. Mm-hmm. And that's why we've invested in this platform to which we're open sourcing, which means we're not going to charge for it. None of our partners charge for that software platform, so that we can just help get a better base level of software that we can innovate on, but of course anybody else can innovate on top of as well.
Mm-hmm. Mark McCluskey, what about voice over IP, where you can basically have a free phone call through your computer and companies that support it like Skype? Are we seeing the end of them?
I don't think we're seeing the end of them at all. I think what we might actually be seeing is those moving more and more into the mobile space as well, so that you know, you are able to move beyond the carriers charging you per minutes of voice calls. So instead of the sort of complicated fee structures that you get into, that it's easy to imagine a future not too long from now when networks are capable of doing it, where I pay a flat fee per month for all the IP traffic I can generate and do all of my calling over IP instead of over the voice cellular network.
Mark, it occurs to me that on the Sprint network, it wouldn't take very much to take an iPod Touch, which is essentially an iPhone without the phone part, add a microphone back in, add voice over IP, and on the Sprint network you would have an iPhone that was completely released from the bonds of AT&T.
Yeah, you know, and I think that, you know, I come at a lot of this from a consumer perspective, and that's what excites me about these innovations and about companies like Google trying to break the business model. As you were talking about, Ira, the business of cell phones and the way it's been constructed in the United States especially has not been very advantageous to consumers and has tended to stifle innovation in hardware and software. It's been unfortunate and a lousy situation. And so I think any move towards scenarios like that where, yeah, you could hack together something pretty quickly that sort of lets you make all your calls from a modified iPod Touch using Skype, and you're rocking and rolling without being locked into AT&T or Apple's sort of world in that way.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the next generation of cell phones this hour, a Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Steve Cherry of the IEEE Spectrum, Rich Miner of Google, and Mark McCluskey at Wired Magazine. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get a few phone calls in here. Michael in Williamstown, New Jersey. Hi, Michael.
It's Williamstown. Hey, it's South Jersey. Listen, gentlemen, I got a big question for all of you. I live and die by the cell phone. I'm a salesperson. I travel from restaurant to restaurant. I've been in several different states. I just want a cell phone. It's great. It could take a picture. It could surf the internet. I want a cell phone that works all the time. I'm always losing calls. It doesn't matter what carrier it is. there's a novel idea. That's great. It can surf the internet. It's great. Just give me a phone that works. Can anybody do that?
Yeah, that's exactly. Where are those dead? Get rid of the dead spots. I just don't need the bells and whistles. I just need to make a phone call and get one when they're calling me, right?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, the U.S. is not a conducive country to build a fail-safe cellular network. You know, in countries like Japan and Korea and Western Europe, you're just dealing with so much less geographic space. You know, I'm sitting in a mountain valley right now where I have no cell service, which, yeah, for me is like the caller. It's like having my arm cut off. I don't even know what to do without a cell signal. Mm-hmm. But it's so hard to build that infrastructure. You just need so much spending. And so you tend to get these situations where some carriers are better in some areas and some are better in others, and everybody's just trying to get that network built up to never drop a call. But
mm-hmm. I mean, all that stuff that you guys are talking about, it would be fantastic, the iPhone and all that stuff. It would be great to have that at my fingertips. But if I can't make, on an average, a regular phone call without having to call my customer back three or four times, depending on the area, it doesn't do me any good.
Yeah. We hear you. Thanks for calling. What about an idea that you talked about WiMAX, which is the large area. What about an idea where you could borrow the internet from people's houses, just the connection as you drive by them, and everybody would benefit that way?
Ira, there are people working on just that sort of thing. The problem is Wi-Fi, which is what we're talking about, really just doesn't project very far. And when it does project far enough, it uses a lot of power, and there's the potential for a lot of interference, including with itself. So in the long run, that's just not a very realistic scenario.
And what's wrong with satellite-based cell phones?
Just not enough bandwidth, really.
Yeah, I mean, there are innovations with Wi-Fi. I mean, for instance, T-Mobile has some products now where you can buy a Wi-Fi access point from them, and if your home doesn't have great coverage, you put that Wi-Fi access point, and when you're at your house, you can switch over to Wi-Fi. It turns out a lot of the new phones, the ones that we're looking at, actually typically do have Wi-Fi radios as well as carrier radios. And so then the question is, does the software support in the phone letting you, and does the carrier enable you to switch over from their network to a Wi-Fi network if that happens to be a better, stronger network?
Mm-hmm. All right, gentlemen, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break and come back, talk lots more, take a few more phone calls, talking with Rich Miner, Mark McCluskey, and Stephen Cherry about the future of cell phone technology. If you can only wait just a few more months. It's always a few months around the corner, so stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We're talking this hour about the future of the next generation of cell phones with Stephen Cherry of the IEEE Spectrum magazine, Rich Miner of Google, and Mark McCluskey at Wired magazine. Our number, 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's see if, let me see if I can ask a question that's just would sum up the whole thing. Is the next generation, will I be able to choose a phone and choose a carrier and have both of them work just the way I want them to without having to say, this carrier, you have to have this phone, and this carrier, you have to have that phone? Steve?
I think we're going to see that pretty soon with the Sprint network, and we'll see it fairly soon, and that is within 5 or 6 years on probably whoever wins the 700 megahertz auction. We'll see it in some places where unlocked phones are the rule. Those networks will become more and more open. And I think it'll take a really long time before we see it everywhere.
Mm-hmm. You agree with that?
Well, I think one big change here, Ira, is that the mobile phone is starting to be heavily influenced by people who really understand software. That's one of the significant things I think you see with Google and some of the other recent announcements that we've discussed here today is historically mobile phones have been controlled by companies that know hardware or control radio networks. And you now, with the entrance of someone like Google, and you also mentioned the iPhone, you're starting to see the critical mass of influence on what that mobile phone experience is like mm-hmm. is coming from companies that really understand software. And as a result of that, I do think you're going to start to see a much more enjoyable experience on the mobile phone. Mm.
Do you think this is going to spill over into other media, like the cable company? You know, cable companies come bundled with a package. You can't pick and choose. If I can start seeing things that I want to see anytime on my cell phone, because it's going to have a better screen, high resolution. Are the cable companies, might they say, you know, we'd better get better? There was a revolt in the cell phone industry. There could be a revolt in the cable industry.
You know, I think what all of these boil down to is the network and the bandwidth and the ability to get the content to people where they want it, when they want it, and how they want it. And, you know, historically, both the cell carriers, and you mentioned cable, and, you know, I think that they have a lot in common, and that is they've controlled these delivery mechanisms, and that's given them control over things, and that's led to this business model where they want to lock you in for a couple of years and make sure that they have their revenue streams going. You know, as there are more competition with things like the 700 megahertz spectrum and with Sprint making this move towards a more open network and with, you know, in the TV realm with satellite becoming a bigger and bigger deal and pushing out more satellites to get more bandwidth going, you know, competition always benefits the consumer, and we've not really had a lot of it in these industries for a long time.
Yeah, and I just saw a stat that said 18% of the American population have watched a full-length TV show or movie on their computer. So I think what you're starting to see is, as the computers enter the living room and as the, again, even TV platforms like phone platforms start to become smarter, more open, and internet-connected, then absolutely I think that openness is what causes people to rethink their business models and find ways to embrace openness as opposed to fight it.
Rich Miter, do you see yourself as the champion, the champions of the consumer?
You know, absolutely. I sort of, you know, the vision that we're following is one that I had since I was working for a mobile phone company myself several years ago. And very much, you know, our goal is really to drive innovation and to drive choice for consumers. We don't think that we should do that independent of our partners, which are, you know, mobile phone carriers and handset manufacturers, but we think we can help elevate the view of the user and help educate people and bring people into a world where you now have companies like Sprint talking about and embracing openness where you wouldn't have heard that a few years ago.
Steve Charing?
You know, it's interesting that you would connect the cell phone and the cable questions. First of all, the Federal Communications Commission Chairman Martin indicated that he wants to sort of end this bundling of cable channels, these plans. But more importantly is the shift that we're also talking about in just consumer behavior. They want to watch programs when they want to watch them. Some people want to wait and just buy a DVD that has an entire season and then just watch the entire season in a row. The common thread here is the internet protocol. It's what makes networks like Sprint's different from every other network, and it's what's going to make cable different. Once these networks are basically IP networks and you're just delivering content as data, then consumers do what they want, because application builders can make applications that they think consumers want, and people will pick and choose what they want and do what they want. And really, the cable companies and the cell phone carriers have a limited ability to stop that trend.
All right, we'll see how well that works out. I want to thank all of you for taking time to be with us. Stephen Cherry, Senior Associate Editor at IEEE Spectrum Magazine in New York, and that's a publication of the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers. Rich Miter is the group manager for the mobile platforms at Google. He's also one of the founders of Android. That's the phone software platform we've been talking about. And Mark McCluskey, a senior editor for products at Wired Magazine and was editor-in-chief of Wired Test. That's a rundown of 300 new products that is out now. Thank you all for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron.
You're welcome.